Today's episode is brought to you by Positively Productive Systems, whose mission is to be the antidote to your stress and to provide compassionate productivity resources and coaching that help you heal and achieve. Be sure to check out both free and paid resources at positivelyproductive.com/resources. I've always been prone to finding the most efficient way to do anything. It's just been something in me where I'm like, okay, how can we do better? How can we make it quicker and more effective? And I realized, well, if I coach people where they're at inside, we're going to be able to fix the outside so much faster. You're listening to the Positively Living Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Zarotny, founder of Positively Productive Systems and a productivity coach certified in positive psychology and stress management. Join me as we explore ways to live a more proactive, positive life with episodes on productivity, self-awareness, mindset, entrepreneur life, habits and systems, simplicity, fun, and more. I understand overwhelm personally as a multi-passionate entrepreneur, wife and mom to kids and cats, and as a caregiver. I'm here to help you choose what's right for you so you can do less, live more, and breathe easier. Sound good? Let's get to it. Welcome to the Positively Living Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa, and I'm thrilled you could join me for my 200th episode. This is a celebration, to be sure. It's surreal to think we started with one episode, and now we're in a place that only 3% of podcasters arrive. I'm honored and humbled and ready to do even better by you. Thank you so much for being here with me and being part of what I hope to be a very long-running show. I'm always grateful when you tune into an episode and especially excited to celebrate with you today. Please note that you're in for something a bit different, since I'm being interviewed on my own show. My guest host, Manpreet, is a friend and former guest. He joined me 2 years ago on podcast episode 101, just after I celebrated 100 episodes by having my biz bestie Liz interview me to celebrate that. I'll be sure to include those episodes in the show notes for you to check out. Manpreet's intention with this conversation today was for you to learn more about the host behind the mic, so to speak. We cover a lot of personal ground, digging into my story before the podcast, my reasons and insights about the show, my favorite moments, which were hard to narrow down, and my mission so far as well as going forward. I have shared a number of personal stories on the show, but this goes deeper than any of them so far and gives you my why behind what I do and what makes me show up each week. Now that 200 is upon us, what's next? You'll see guests coming back to continue conversations and dig deeper into the topics that will encourage you and guide you to action so you can do less, live more, and breathe easier. Now let's let Manpreet take over with the interview.
Welcome to your own show.
Yay!
So for all the listeners and also for myself, I know maybe a little bit about you, but what was your journey prior to getting this thing called podcasting?
It's really interesting when you say that. It's like, what happened before? And I realized I have these like chapters in my life. I think there is a chapter that I had before my business and then the evolution of the business and then the business leading to the podcast. So there are a couple of episodes. I mean, the trailer episode here, and then I also have a caregiver and clutter episode that I dig into a lot of these details. But let me give you an overview, if you will, especially if you're new. Before the business, I was a caregiver for my mom. She had Alzheimer's, and I had my two babies. So at one point, I had an infant, a toddler, and a mom, and I was caring for them while still trying to run some businesses. I've been an entrepreneur for a while. My husband and I did wedding photography, and he was working full-time. And somehow, we managed to survive this time. It was joyous. It was deeply difficult, and it really changed me as a person. And so when I stepped out of caregiving, instead of going back to life as I knew it, as I was used to, as I expected it to be, I need to do what? To do things, to get a job, to step into something else, I actually stepped back and really cleared a path in my life. I decluttered inside and out. I realize that now. I didn't have those words for it at the time, but it was whole life decluttering, allowing me the space to heal myself and heal my family, to process everything that happened, and then to figure out a new and better way to move forward, understanding how little we actually need to be truly happy. And with that, I knew I wanted to help people. The iterations of my business included professional organizing for a time, because that's such a tangible way for us to declutter and to create a space that is conducive to living well. And I still stand by that. And I still help people with virtual organizing from time to time. I just had a client recently where I was helping her sketch out a room and, you know, change and clear out a number of things in her space so that actually it was her daughter could function better in her room. But I did realize very quickly that it was something so much deeper that created this clutter and this reason that we needed to organize and to hire people to help us. And that was the head and the heart. And I've always been prone to finding the most efficient way to do anything. It's just been something in me where I'm like, okay, how can we do better? How can we make it quicker and more effective? And I realized, well, if I coach people where they're at inside, we're going to be able to fix the outside so much faster. And that's what I did. That brought me to productivity coaching. That brought me to saying, hey, there's a different way. We live this life with a society that says, do more, go harder, hustle and grind. Coming from a time where I was in survival mode and I'm healing from this hurt, I'm looking at everyone like, how do you live like that? And I don't want to go back there because that led to burnout. So how do we do it differently? And that message was a message I wanted to continue to share. I got to share it in summits and on podcast interviews. And I thought, how do I reach more people? And in 2020, I was convinced I was going to write a book to do that. That was my year of the book. Guess what? It turned into a podcast. So that, in the best nutshell I can offer you, is what brought me to sharing this message. I've always loved conversation, and I knew that this conversation was one I really wanted to have, and I'm so grateful I did.
Yeah, and we are all so grateful you did. From that moment where you decided to write the book, turning into podcast, and now sitting on 200 podcast. What has been the favorite moment for you in this journey?
Respectfully, sir, I am going to not answer that question. Here's why. So those of you who know me know that as soon as you're like, pick a favorite, I'm like, no, it's a very multi-passionate thing of me, right? It's so difficult. It's like trying to pick a favorite child, right? That's not right. We all have one. but no, seriously, it's so difficult. So I thought about like, what would it mean, like a favorite moment? And I got to tell you that it's like each moment that happens, each milestone, it feels like my favorite. And then it's like, that's my favorite. No, that's my favorite. If I have to at least give you a category of favorites, it would be the personal messages that I receive that my podcast has made a difference. Like things that you've said to me, things that people have messaged me, told me in person that my words made a difference. Those firsts, that real human connection, that's my favorite. I mean, I love the numbers. I love the fact that this is now top 3% worldwide podcast, and we're coming up on 30,000 downloads. And, you know, there's a lot of cool metrics that say, wow, people are listening. But yeah, it's the people themselves that matter the most to me. And when I get those DMs and I see those reviews, especially because people that I haven't interacted with otherwise, it, oh my gosh, it lifts my heart.
Out of those messages, has there been one or two or anything that just left a mark on you, like that made you feel like, I don't care what, how long I have to do it, but I know I'm doing this for life kind of thing, like that instilled that belief in your podcast a lot more than maybe you had when you started?
Each and every one of them does. And I think it's almost a cumulative thing, not unlike the answer I gave you about organizing and learning bits and pieces and understanding why I want to do what I do, why it matters. Every time someone says to me, oh, that made so much sense. I've had clients come to me in a session and say, I listened to this episode, and they're like, they're inspired coming to me, having listened to me. It's a wild combination, but I love it. You talk about efficiency. I've somehow inspired them before we've even gotten together. And then we've done some pre-work together without me even knowing. I think that's incredible. I think it's just every step that I take and every time someone says that encouraged me and inspired me, it gave me hope. It gave me an idea of what I'm going to do. I tried this thing. I can remember one time having a client come to me and he said, I listened to this episode. It was on tackling your to-do list in 4 simple steps. And he actually went through those steps and had like big poster boards up on his walls and actually went through the steps. And then we talked about it and it hit me. I can make a difference. I think it's that kind of response that it keeps me going. I can't not do it.
Coming to your podcast recording, when your episode is done, when you're done recording it, do you know right away whether it's going to be a good episode or not? Do you have those senses now that you've done 200 of those episodes?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. A couple of things that I would say, and this might be the coach in me coming out, so bear with me. First of all, my question would be, what is good, right? So it's a good episode. What does that even mean? Because there's so much to an episode that we don't realize. We think of the episode as being what is released on the platform that you can hear. But there's so much to it in terms of the research, the intent. If it has a guest involved, then there's the collaboration and the connection. So the benefit that I receive is like multi-level. And I would also say that in terms of good, if we're talking quality, is it a quality episode that's going to matter? All I can do is show up with my intentions for that to be the case. I protect my listener with a ferocity that you might not expect. I'm very particular about who comes on the podcast. I have a strong vetting system. I have a long lead time, forms that need to be filled out, steps that need to be taken. Sometimes I think people think it's a bit much and they may not expect it, but it's very important to me that any guest that comes on is in true alignment and comes to offer value and can offer value. We need to know very specifically. It's very important to me that if I have an expert on, that you are truly an expert who's vetted properly and, you know, with the proper accreditation. When I do all that, I've already done the work to know that it's good. And then we have our interaction, right? We have our conversation. I've done the research when I step in and do a solo episode to know that it is good. And all I can do is offer it up. What's really funny is sometimes I think there's an episode that's like fantastic. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so interesting. It's different. And I'm not saying crickets, but it's not like that great. And then other times something will come out that people clamor for. So you can't know with the timing and who's listening and what resonates. But all you can do is keep showing up your best each time.
I can vouch for your vetting process. I went through that and it was beautiful. It was, I wouldn't say a bit too much, but it was really thorough. When I compare to the other podcasts I have been, some of the podcasts, people, you know, you would just put it in interest and then the next time you meet is on actual recording. And I've found for myself, if I don't meet the person before just the recording, I'm meeting them first time the recording, the chemistry is not there and it comes through the conversation, right? So yeah. I love that. You know, your process is so strong that it gave multiple times to interact before the recording. And also, I know that you keep the guests accountable to the topic, to the audience, and it's just a beautiful conversation. How do you see caregiving and podcasting in relation to each other? Like, what's common? What gels together? Because you carried that sort of experience and brought it and, you know, made it available to the audience.
Yeah, caregiving and podcasting, and now podcasting speaking to caregivers and creatives and all those who are challenged by juggling multiple things in life, right? I would say that it's making sure that those you are serving are taken care of, for one, right? And we just talked about how I do that. But the other side of it, and it, this is the side that I learned, I may not have always done this as a caregiver, but I've definitely learned it, is making sure that I stay healthy doing it as well. And that's that whole self-care thing, you know, that we talk about all the time. And I think that it's easy to roll your eyes and be like, self-care, what even is that? Well, I know that the more satisfied and healthy I am doing this, right? And that means doing it authentically, doing it ridiculously, doing it differently, whatever it is, that's the healthier I am in this process and the better I'm going to show up, the better quality it is. And I think as caregivers, that's the same thing. Whenever someone says they're caring for another, a lot of times I think people tend to ask how the person being cared for is. And I understand that because that is someone who is ill and you want to know how they are. And I'm always going to be the one to say, and how are you, the caregiver? Because it takes so much out of you. So I think there's a similarity in terms of service. And it's so important that those who serve do it in a way that is best for them. And so that's a tip you can take if you're thinking about podcasting, if you're podcasting again, if you're still podcasting, but you're not sure about continuing. The best way to create sustainability and longevity is to find the ways that really suit you and that make you happy. Don't try to please others. You can take care of your listeners best by taking care of you and knowing how you serve best.
When did you learn that it was okay to take care of yourself first and not to please others? Like, what was there a moment or time that led you to that place where you're like, okay, no, I need to take care of myself first?
I think it was almost losing myself in caregiving for my mom. There was such guilt and obligation. I mean, it was honor too. Please don't get me wrong. This was my mother and I was able to give back, not just pay it forward. And there's real beauty in that. And I wouldn't change that. But people say, what would you change if you would change anything, right? I don't like to live with regrets. I won't regret what I did. But if I could change something, the only thing I would change was how I cared for myself, the boundaries that I would set for myself. And it's because when I was no longer a caregiver for her, I still had two children to raise, mind you. But in many ways, that pressure of having to care for them saved me and kept me going when I didn't think I could. But you need to understand that that time of caregiving nearly broke me. And so it's like people who have near-death experiences or, you know, you have a major event in your life, it turns you around. It gives you a scare. It tells you, oh, wait a minute, let's take a step back. So I would absolutely say that was a turning point for me to say, whoa, back it up here. What can we do differently? And then I had to heal myself, and I'm still healing. It's been, I can't do the math, but at least 15 years, and I'm still healing. But I also know that I have an opportunity to share all of those experiences with others. They say that you sharing your story can be someone else's survival guide, and that's my goal.
Would you mind taking us into one of your days in your life 15 years ago when you were living that caregiving life when your days were packed, in contrast to now, how it has changed, so people can see what you were doing when you were not healed or when you didn't have the resources, the knowledge, and how doing what you did in that time led you to where you are today?
So it's really interesting because there were many elements of it that you could look to that are similar to what I do now. Again, born out of necessity, I had notebooks for everything. I had notebooks that tracked how my mom was acting and what was going on with her, what she remembered, what she didn't. I also had very little ones. So we had a constant juggle of me getting up, figuring out where everyone was, arranging medication. That was really big. So constantly tracking that, then feeding everyone, getting ones up, ones down for naps, taking them to and from places. There would be, you know, all the usual things that you have to do to run a household. I can't even recall like which businesses I was running because I was doing freelance administrative work and freelance writing, helping people with resumes. I guess it was a constant juggle. And that may not be different now sometimes, except for the people that are constantly being juggled are independent, right? So this was a lot of dependence, and safety was a big concern. I would say, though, the biggest thing about that was a constant state of stress and anxiety, and then an inability to sleep properly. I was in a perpetual state of sleep deprivation.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, when did you get time to sleep?
I did the best I could, but it was a constant challenge. And also, too, I have to admit that when you're in that go mode, even when you have an opportunity to sleep, it's not always that restful. I would say it was constant spiked cortisol levels, like constant stress response and lack of sleep were the biggest difference. Now, I still meal planned and, you know, organized things and kept things in notebooks. And it's so funny because you would see the very same thing happening with me now. But I breathe easier now, and I also know how to keep that going, and that's what I share with everyone. I know when things start to heighten because the stress response is still there, and major life events have happened. We've had grief and trauma and mental health crises in our family recently, but I know better how to respond to them. I know better also, too, I think, in terms of how I schedule myself and the bandwidth that I have, it keeps a lot of space open and I have resources that help me when these things happen. I didn't back then. I had some beautiful friends whom I'm still to this day so incredibly grateful for, the ones who would stop by with a gallon of milk and check on me or drop a kid off or pick a kid up if they could. But there was no family around except for my mom, and I was caring for her. She wasn't caring for us. So, yeah, the difference now, just in terms of waking up, sleeping better, breathing easier, and knowing, I guess, how to better make the choices. That's why I'm so big on boundaries and self-care. That would be the difference between then and now, but also too, it never ends. Life will always be coming at you with all the challenges. All you can do is find the best tools to navigate it. And that's what I'm about sharing.
Beautiful. You know, that reminded me of the movie Cinderella Man. It's about this legendary boxer. And he used to be, without getting too much into the movie, but he was once a champion. Then he started to lose and he started to lose. And it was during the Great Depression. And then he made a comeback when nobody expected him to make a comeback. And when interviewed, he was asked, how did you win? You know, nobody at your age could win after losing for so long. And he said, this time I knew what I was fighting for. And then his answer, he was fighting for in his mind, milk for his children, because they were so broke that they wouldn't have milk for his young children. And I think that fight for your keeping your children's safety, you know, that carried you in many ways, I think. And that care is what shows up in the podcasting world, you know, because it could leave people bitter for whatever reasons, right? You could make your experiences bitter and question and all that, but I'm glad you did not and you had those friends so that make it easier or not, relatively easier so that you did not turn bitter because it's so much easier, especially with the stress and the lifestyle and the amount of time that you spent doing that.
I think that's a fair point, and we can turn bitter pretty easily, I think, when hard things happen. And some days, even though they helped, I think it was more of the reassuring feeling that someone was out there. And I definitely had my bitterness, and it just occurred to me the other part of the equation that's so different is I didn't have the same sense of humor back then. I didn't have the same joyousness. I was in go mode all the time, and it was really challenging. And I can remember my husband saying you know, doing the, well, we have this to be grateful for. And I was angry. And I share this in my gratitude series. I share this with interviews about gratitude. And when I teach gratitude, that I was very angry when people would bring up gratitude because I mistook it for someone denying my lived experience and the pain that I was in. I understand now that's not the case. You can be devastated and grateful at the same time. And it is a beautiful, powerful healing habit that can help you along during those difficult times. But I didn't know that. And yeah, I was definitely not the joyful person. I shouldn't say that. People saw me as joyful. There are plenty of pictures of me laughing. There are plenty of moments of joy, experiencing beautiful things with my children. But deep down inside and behind closed doors and just getting by, there was a state of depression and hurt that definitely came out in lack of patience and just how I interacted with the world.
Well, I always had this stigma against like negative connotation for the word depression, like as if something really bad has to happen for somebody to be depressed. And it's only recently when I discovered that we all have this mild, low sort of depression somewhere in our body from our past, from our present, where we are that unsatisfied with what's happening, that relentless pursuit. There is a form of depression, and unless we actively do something about it, it just becomes bigger. And would you mind sharing anything on like what has helped you alleviate yourself out of that depression, even though it may be, you know, minor events during the day, something that made you feel sad, and how and what helped you overcome that?
Absolutely. And I don't think that we can, you know, separate out traumatic events. I had to learn to accept the fact that what I went through was a traumatic event. I used to say that others, you know, the bigger events, the catastrophes, people who are in the military, my heart goes out to them. That is true trauma. But guess what? So are things like trying to care for your mom who doesn't know who you are and might put your children in danger. That's trauma too. And so I had to allow myself to accept that that was trauma. There's also grief. I had anticipatory grief. I had grief about this woman who was still here, who was my mother, but I was also losing in pieces. And then I had shame and guilt after being relieved when she passed because it gave me a break, and then having to sort of grieve in reverse because at first I just felt relief and then I felt guilt about feeling relieved. And then I had to grieve her passing. And I would say 6 months in, I finally read the book on grief and grieving, and I always recommend it to everyone. So there's a lot of processing that has to be done. And there are a lot of things that we experience that we need to acknowledge. So I think that's first and foremost, and certainly getting help for that. And I have, you know, been through therapy and I have been under doctor's care, but more than that, for healthy living. And that would be my first and foremost recommendation is, are you eating foods that nourish you? Are you doing things that make you happy and that you love? Are you eschewing them because you're a caregiver and you feel that you have to take care of people and not do things that you love? Like, you can't be happy when you're taking care of someone you love who's hurting. No, you need that. Are you sleeping as well as you can? It's those things, you know, movement, exercise. So I don't like to use the E word all the time, but you know, those types of things are so incredibly important. It's all the things that we talk about on the podcast. And that's why, because no matter what, if you touch upon each of those things, if you make space for that in your life, it can help alleviate. Now, I can't necessarily fix chemical imbalances that cause depression. And that's where you continue with doctor's care and you figure out what's next, but it can make a significant difference. I was recently certified in mental health first aid, and it really encouraged me to know that our lifestyle has such an incredible impact on our mental health. And even if we have a mental health disorder, we can live well if we bump up that lifestyle. And that's what I've done.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yesterday I was listening on a podcast or I think an audiobook, and they said we spend so much time making ourselves efficient when it comes to productivity systems, like efficiencies, and because we want to, you know, maximize the time we have, right? But we do not pay attention to our thoughts and the energy spent on those thoughts as they spiral through our day. We actually lose 20% of our energy every day in those thoughts, and 90% of those thoughts are just mindless, like they're not even something that are of any value to anyone. So it's great to take care of yourself. So, truths that you learned only because you did this show. Like if you were not doing this show, you would believe that you wouldn't have learned these three truths.
That's such a good question. There are a lot of things that I've learned, but I would say that the three truths from having done this show that I have learned is that, one, I have something to say and want to say it. And that's big, right? Finding your voice. It may not seem like that would be a thing that I would need to do, but I absolutely needed to do that. The second is that people are willing to listen to what I have to say. And that's another incredible thing because, again, you might not expect that from me, but going in, I wasn't sure who would listen other than maybe a family member just trying to be nice to me, right? And then the third that I know from, again, receiving the comments, the messages, having the interactions that I mentioned earlier, is that I am making a difference.
That is beautiful. If you had a magic wand, what gift would you want your listeners to have?
Magic wand means anything. So it would absolutely be easy and very truthful to say, you know, the best health and happiness and a glorious life, of course. But I would say that the truth of the matter here is the gift that I wish is actually something that's very real, and that's hope and encouragement. Because with those, you can do anything. We can do the hope and encouragement without the magic wand. So maybe it takes a while to get the hope and encouragement. So the magic wand will like speed up the process. But with hope and encouragement, with optimism, studies have shown that there's a direct correlation to that and your success as an entrepreneur. You know, there's so many things about having hope and encouragement. That means having the proper support and the belief in a potentially good future that creates its own magic. So that's what I wish, and that's my mission.
All right. That's a good one. Anybody can live with more hope and more optimism in their life. Are you ready for a rapid wrap-up?
Yeah, you know it.
I wish there was a place where you could sing or add some humor. Maybe that's something for 300th episode. But talking about music, is there a song that lifts your spirit that you listen to when you're down and or you're not in the mood, but it brings you in the mood?
There are so many songs. And so this is one of those, don't make me choose. So let's put two of them on the list. I'm going to break my own rules, okay? First, Boston's More Than a Feeling is what I put on in the car on a sunny day with the windows rolled down, especially when it's just become spring and, you know, there's that hope in the air, right? Again, and I listen to that and it lifts me up. And then the second one, that's like a power song, if you will, about just keep dreaming, you got this, is from the Greatest Showman soundtrack, and it's A Million Dreams.
I've not heard those songs. Gotta hear it.
Oh, okay. Well, I will be sending those to you. I close my eyes and I can see a world that's waiting there for me that I call my own. Yeah, through the dark, through the door, through where no one's gone before, and it feels like home. I can't remember the exact words that were crazy. They can say I've lost my mind, but every night I lie in bed, a million colors fill my head, a million dreams are keeping me awake. So those are the words, and it's just so powerful. It's like, don't worry about what they say. Just keep dreaming. Let the ideas flow. Let the hope drive you to what you want to do next.
What is music for you?
What is music for me? That's like a whole podcast episode. It is my therapy. It is my joy. It is my expression. It is my connection to any kind of, like my deeper connection to the world and to the universe and a spiritual connection. It is my way to connect with others. And it is a faster language, right? And it's a language that's very special because music can connect to those with cognitive impairment that may not even be vocal, but they will connect when you play music that they recognize. Music is magic for me.
Music is magic. Okay, the last one, but not the least one. What are you grateful for today?
What am I not grateful for, Manpreet? First of all, you, our connection, your willingness to come do this. This is a very special gift to me, so thank you for that. I am grateful for my family, who's always behind me on this, who the shift in having my children, who I needed because them needing me kept me going, and now they give back to me in ways I can't express. My husband for really being my biggest fan and always challenging me and questioning what I do, but understanding now there are things he doesn't question, like this podcast. He's incredibly proud of me and stands behind my choices in this, and that means a lot. And my listener, each and every one of you, I'm grateful that I get to do this. That's the reframe. That's the gratitude reframe there always, that I get to. I get to do this, and if you'll all allow it, I plan to continue.
And I'm sure they will. I could spend days talking to you and not get bored. And I know your listeners would get bored listening to me, but they would not get bored of listening to you and your wisdom, your journey. I just wish you, like I said in the beginning, that this is 30, you know, very soon 300, 500, and 1,000. I want to be, when there is 1,000, I want to be there.
You got it.
And I'm sure your journey has been meaningful, not only to you, your inner circle, immediate friends, but people like me who just know you from distance, listening to your podcast or connected over this little world called internet. And it has been meaningful to connect and know that there is somebody who truly, truly cares about what they put out and the impact they leave with each episode. So congratulations, and I just cannot wait for the 1,000th episode.
Thank you so much, Manpreet. Thank you for joining me today. Your time is precious and limited, and I'm honored you chose to spend it with me. If you have feedback, questions, or want to schedule a chat, head to positivelyproductive.com/connect. And if you are looking for any of the resources referenced on the podcast, from books to products to training and more, go to positivelyproductive.com/resources.